Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Gallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Minnis, Richardson, Patty Smith, excused for business, Nolan.
Flag salute will be led by Representative John Lim.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which we stand, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Last call for courtesies. Today is Representative Bob Jensen's birthday. Happy birthday, Bob. Messages from the governor. We'll stand at ease while we check on a quorum. We do have a quorum. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he's approved and signed the following bills: House Bill 3546, House Bill 5008, 5009, 5010, 5011, 5034, 5043, 5045, 5049, 5052, 2076, 2079, 2109, 2111, 2121, 2122, 2160, 2191, 2265, 2266, 2267, 2268, 2274, 2290, 2316, 2319, 2321, 2348, 2357, 2361, 2384, 2444.
The governor has been very busy. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed House Bill 3546, Senate Bill 365, 1036, concurred in House amendments, and repassed Senate Bill 400. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 342, 347, 431, 587, 789, 1011, 1017. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed House Bills 2073, 2580, and HJM 6.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request a unanimous consent for a short recess for purposes of a Republican caucus.
For what time period, Representative Scott?
10 or 15 minutes.
Representative Scott asked for unanimous consent for the purposes of the Republican caucus for 15 minutes. Representative Hunt.
Democrats will also seize this time and caucus briefly.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, we are in recess.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Menace, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Gilman, Jensen, Greg Smith, Witt, excused, Burley, Butler, Menace, Richardson, Patty Smith.
We do have a quorum. We're under propositions and motions. Representative Nathanson, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to return to courtesies, please.
Representative Nathanson asks for unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have some visitors today from St. Paul's Catholic School, the fourth grade class, St. Paul's from Eugene. I'd like to welcome them to the Capitol, and they have a special connection with several of our representatives. Hello and welcome. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you all with us. Are there further courtesies? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This group from St. Paul's Catholic School in Eugene has my brother as a chaperone, Vance Yates, and my niece, Annie Yates, are in the group. So I'd like to say hi to them.
Are there further courtesies? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My daughter-in-law was also scheduled to be among the chaperones today. Thank you.
Any further courtesies? Puts us back in propositions and motions. Representative Roblin.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 3369.
Representative Roblin moves the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 3369. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As many of you know, my allergies were really killing me yesterday. I did not feel well today. I am much better. Having worked with my abacus last night, I believe this bill today would be much better served on the floor.
Is there further discussion? Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
I think that was enough.
Those of the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 3369 will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam votes no. Representative Dallum votes no. Representative Jensen votes aye. Speaker votes aye. Representative Cameron, have we recorded your vote? He votes aye. All have voted. House Bill 3369A, the motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. In compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, Section 468, Subsection 3, the question immediately recurs on final consideration of House Bill 3369. Is there further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to just recap where we were yesterday. We were talking about local public safety coordinating councils that were created by the legislature in the late 70s. They were created to bring further collaboration and coordination among the various components of the criminal justice system, everything from local police to county sheriffs, district attorneys, judges, mental health providers, youth advocates. It brings together all the parties to make a more effective criminal justice system. Yesterday, there was some concern that the state might be beginning to meddle too much into local affairs. Actually, this bill does not create any new meddling. That was already done by the legislature back in the 70s. What this bill hopes to do is merely to achieve additional oversight, if you will, and some additional help. We heard testimony in committee, for example, from a local presiding court judge and also from a member of a public safety coordinating council and a member of the Criminal Justice Commission who came to talk about the effectiveness of these local councils. They're very effective in some areas, but not as effective as they could be in others. So this bill is merely to bring a little more coordination and give a little oomph to those who are asking for some more help. What this bill would do would make sure that vacancies are filled as soon as practical and possible, and it also asks for a little bit of reporting. The Criminal Justice Commission already makes a report to the legislature. It just makes sure that they be sure to include comment on how those local public safety coordinating councils are doing when they make their report. It also asks that the Board of County Commissioners, which is already receiving the recommendations from the coordinating council, just respond with a letter to them saying whether they were able to meet their recommendations or not. So I believe that this is a very good idea to follow through in something that the legislature already set up, and it's working pretty darn effectively in most places, and we hope that all across the state we can give them a little bit of extra help. Thank you.
Representative Nelson, for what purpose do you rise? Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? She votes aye. All have voted. House Bill 3369A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. First reading of House Bills. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2140, relating to public contracting code. House Bill 2152, relating to suspension of driving privileges. House Bill 2603, relating to legislative assembly website. House Bill 2626, relating to recycling of electronic devices for preventing declaring emergency. House Bill 2872, relating to use of mobile communication device while driving. House Bill 2905, relating to uniform prudent management of institutional fund acts. House Bill 2927, relating to task force on anatomical gift donations and declaring emergency. House Bill 2982, relating to registration fees and declaring emergency. House Bill 3157, relating to parking for disabled persons. House Bill 3161, relating to veterans recognition registration plates. House Bill 3179, the public charter schools and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3512, the new task force on agricultural workforce needs and declaring an emergency.
Bills read a second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in short summary.
Senate Bill 79, relating to records of disability. Records relating to records of disability of elector exempts information contained in voter registration records and relating to disability of elector from disclosure under public records law.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 79. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Crummell, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate Bill 79, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 112, relating to subpoenas and criminal actions, provides for alternative methods for serving corporations and limited partnerships with subpoenas for production of papers, documents, records, or other tangible things in criminal actions.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 112. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Roblin votes aye. Senate Bill 112, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2435, relating to vehicle appraiser certificates.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2435A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, 2435A comes out of the Business and Labor. The Auto Appraisers of Oregon, the primary proponents, met with the other industry members and organizations and voted to support and adamantly supported 2435A. Requires license to appraise vehicles except for licensed vehicle dealers and out-of-state licensed appraisers. This upgrades and improves the licensing already existing in ORS. Allows governmental jurisdictions to use inexperienced and partially experienced existing of new staff to appraise abandoned vehicles once they have approved training, allows approved training to be substituted for experience, providing for actually a new classification of a master appraiser certificate able to provide exceptional experience to consumers and courts on the level that that expertise is needed. Good bill should pass. Urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shuffler votes aye. Representative Barker votes aye. Representative Boquist. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Representative Boquist is off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2435A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2478, relating to building inspection programs and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2478A. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2478A clarifies that a municipality may not assume the responsibility for administering and enforcing a building inspection program unless the municipality is subject to current statute relating to selective municipal building inspection programs prior to the assumption or the responsibility for operating the program is being assumed for the Department of Consumer and Business Services establishes that the measure's provisions do not apply to the assumption of building inspection programs on or after July 1st, 2010. The purpose of House Bill 2478A is to allow municipalities who currently have existing building inspection programs to continue while the Department of Consumer and Business Services Building Codes Division works with stakeholders in establishing items such as building inspector certification program and looking at the current system which oversees local building inspection programs. The measure sets up a 3-year moratorium which allows current local building inspection programs to continue and expand the types of inspections and services they provide. Good bill. Air dry vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Chaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2478A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed.
I voted yes. That's what my
thought was. Clerk, read the next bill.
It's a great strategy, Representative.
House Bill 2553, relating to child support and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2553A. Representative Krummel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to start by thanking the Judiciary Committee and the work of Representative McPherson and Representative Krieger for putting this out, and also the committee that's been working over the course of the interim with Representative Schaffler and Representative Krieger and a couple of senators to help us bring Child Protective Services back in line with what needs to be corrected under law and what needs to happen to protect Oregon's families. We've talked about a series of child welfare bills this week, and we have another one up later in today's agenda as well. And a while back, I reminded the members of the work group that I just talked about that about two bills that I had been working on in the interim, and they agreed to offer their support, and I'm grateful for that. The first of these bills is House Bill 2553, which is before you now. And this prevents the state from punishing parents who have done nothing wrong except try to protect and provide for their children. Right now, under the law, DHS can devastate a family by taking away their kids without any criminal wrongdoing. And then the agency, if you'll excuse the expression, can kick them while they're down. Let me give you a little background about a family in my district. There was a 2-year-old boy, a 10-month-old girl, a dad, a mom, who's pregnant with her third child. In March of 2005, the little girl wakes up one morning and there's a red sore on her leg. Her parents take her to the local hospital emergency room. Two doctors look her over and say, you know, looks like a staph infection, here's some antibiotics, and they send them on their way back home. Some pictures were taken at the hospital, which is, my understanding, a standard operating procedure. And the pictures were sent over to CARES Northwest. They look at the pictures, decide the sore is actually a nasty burn, and that the girl must have been abused. A caseworker shows up at the house, takes the kids, and puts them in foster care for 8 months. The parents don't have a lot of money to begin with. But they hired an attorney, an expensive one. The attorney fights the state in court, and they win. State gives up custody and allows the kids to return home. This is an unfounded claim, and the case should have been closed there. But while the court battle is going on, the mom has a new baby, and she's worried that the state is going to step in. The dad loses his job. And so financially, the family is in very tough shape. And because of the help of friends and relatives, they're able to continue paying for the attorney to represent them in the case. So we're getting up to around Thanksgiving now. And the state decided to send this family an early Christmas present. It was a notice telling them that they owed over $7,000 in child support payments to pay for while the children were in foster care. So now, and I've said this before, if this is how we hold families together, we have a funny way of showing it. We swoop in, we take the kids, we take the kids away, the case is unfounded, then we send them a bill for foster care. So it's like a double jeopardy. And what we've done is that we've destroyed their family unit, and then we've gone ahead and said, you know what, that's not good enough. We want to go ahead and destroy them financially. There were never any criminal charges filed in the case, but in the state's eyes, in the eyes of the caseworkers, they were guilty before they were proven innocent. A couple of days before Christmas, they contacted my office asking for help, and so we went to work and tried to help them. We managed, by contacting DHS, we managed to get the garnishment that was being hit to them reduced by half. It was supposed to have started immediately, but it didn't. And then the state garnished the father's tax refund. And then finally, June of last year, they got a notice from the state that said they didn't owe the state any more money. House Bill 2553 basically says you should not be able to rip a family apart on a false accusation of abuse, and then once they get their kids back, destroy them again by taking away half their income to pay for the foster care expenses. That's what it does. This will help eliminate this form of double jeopardy. And sadly, this is probably not the only family caught in this bureaucratic web. Every year, DHS is reimbursed around $5 million from Oregon families to cover the cost of foster care. And yes, I believe most of those families did, in fact, abuse their children. And they should face charges to pay the state back for the foster care. But under this bill, DHS cannot charge a family like the one that I just told you about an assessment for unfound allegations against the parents. Let's fix this unfair state law so other families don't have to go through the same nightmare in the future. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I appreciate the good representative for bringing this concept and bill forward. And we took it to the dependency work group, which you heard us talk about the other day. And Senator Brown, Senator Cruz, after looking at it, really agreed that this was not a fair way for the agency to do business. And I think it really helps restore justice and have a little more confidence with the agency if they're not allowed to treat people in that way. So please support the bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you. I also would like to thank the representative from Wilsonville for bringing this forward. And I think that it helps to address two problems that we have. One, you want to make sure that families are protected if they go through the type of experience that the good representative's constituent did go through, where there is an allegation of abuse that turns out to be inappropriate. We don't want to further punish the family. At the same time, we have to be careful that we are providing immunity and the ability for the agency to do child abuse investigations, to remove children from the home when there is a concern that that child is being abused, because as we've spoken about on this floor, child abuse and neglect in the state is a tremendous problem. It's very, very difficult for those children's voices to be heard, for their abuse to be taken seriously, and for them to get the help that they need. If we were to create immunity for the department in doing removals or investigations, we would make it even more difficult for those children to get the help that they need. So I appreciate the tack that this bill is taking, which makes sure that families will not suffer a financial penalty when there is a removal due to no fault of their own, but that it also does not undermine the ability of the department to do the very difficult and important job that we have tasked them to do, which is to protect Oregon children. And we need to support the department to do a better job of that, because as we've discussed, we've got 19 Oregon children that die every year who are known to the agency, and we need to be providing them better tools to be getting to those kids that really are suffering, because we owe it to those kids to keep them safe. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Certainly.
He does.
Representative, is there a fiscal impact to this bill?
Thank you, Madam Speaker and Representative. No, there is not a fiscal impact to this bill, because there is not anything that the department has to do from a standpoint of rules and that sort of thing. It is just simply a statement in statute that if the child is removed from the home, that and the charges are abuse is unfounded, then the family is not to be charged for the foster care.
Follow up, please.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
But Representative, as I read it, as it is now, families can be asked to pay for the public assistance. But now you're suggesting that that not be the case. So wouldn't there be a fiscal impact?
Madam Speaker, thank you. And thank you to the representative from Milwaukee for the question. The department, in working with them, Child Protective Services noted that because the number of children and number of cases that are found to be unfounded, that this bill would have, there's not that many, but the ones that there are generally significant from a standpoint of the damage it does to the family, and that the fiscal impact was negligible. There is virtually no fiscal impact.
A clarification. So I just want to make sure that I understand your representative, that you're saying that it's a pretty rare case, and so there would just be a minimal fiscal impact.
That is correct. The number of cases, and I don't have an exact number that this happens to, and I believe that they're all in my district, is that it really is a very low number.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Premel, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm going to be very brief so everybody can just vote yes. I agree, child abuse is very serious, and we need to take it seriously, and we need to act when children are being abused. There is a balance between the authority of the caseworkers in the department and the rights of families, and not to be placed in double jeopardy. And I believe that this bill really accomplishes that. So thank you, please vote yes.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. House Bill 2553A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared. Representative Dallum, are you wishing to be recognized? Representative Dellum, we have not yet dropped the gavel. Representative Dellum votes aye. House Bill 2553A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Olson, for what purpose do you rise?
Request rules be suspended to return the order of courtesies.
Representative Olson requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to have you recognize a fourth grade class from South Shore Elementary up here in the balcony. If you'd stand up and wave at us all. Joy Cleaver is here trying to lasso all those students. But there's a little bit of history, too, I'd like to share with you, too, with South Shore. My oldest daughter attended her first three grades there at South Shore Elementary. My middle daughter was a student teacher at South Shore Elementary. So thank you.
Welcome to the Capitol. Enjoy your day here. Further courtesies? The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2733, relating to individually identifiable health information.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2733A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill arises from an incident that happened a couple years back where 300,000 individual medical records were stolen from an automobile of a healthcare system employee. And the first reaction of the CEO was to say, oh, that's a really bad thing. We're going to find out who's responsible for this, and we're going to do something about it. And in fact, they did find out who was responsible, and they did do thousands. They spent millions of dollars, in fact, dealing with the fact that many people might have had their personal health care records exposed. They responded very well after the first day. But it struck me that the CEO, in his opening remark, didn't say, oh, I have a problem. I've done something really wrong. People can steal records, but the problem in this case was that the official data security problem was to give the records to an individual every night and have them take it home. I mean, this was clearly a wacky security approach in this modern day and age. This bill aims at rectifying that problem. It requires health system organizations, hospitals, and health insurance companies to have a data security system. And it requires them to report on that data security system each year, stating that they have an adequate system in force. And it requires the CEO to sign that statement. This follows from the Sarbanes-Oxley approach to the financial information of an individual corporation. We're under Sarbanes-Oxley, the CEO and the CFO of an organization have to sign the financial statement saying that they're responsible for them. You remember some examples in the business world where there were absolutely fraudulent financial statements, and the CEO said, gee whiz, I didn't know about that. I don't know how that could have happened. Well, we don't really want any of that gee whiz here. So what this bill requires is that the organizations submit a statement saying that they have adequate security systems, requires it to be signed by the CEO of that organization, and requires certification that if there have been any breaches or weaknesses in that system, that those breaches have been reported to the board of directors of the organization. It doesn't require reporting those breaches to the state or individual data security might become public record. It simply requires the CEO that if he recognizes any breaches or any weaknesses in the system, he or she has notified their own board of directors. This is a simple request. It will highlight the data security needs to the CEO, and it will assure that the boards of directors of these health organizations are notified if there's any problems in the system. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative. I apologize for not getting this to you sooner.
Sure, I can make up an answer anyway.
Thank you. I unfortunately don't have ORS 192.519 in front of me, but I'm wondering if an independent practitioner would also be covered under this.
No, they're not covered under this. This is a definition of healthcare organizations. It's hospitals, health systems, and under a different statute, health insurance companies.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kump, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2733A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2766, relating to alcoholic beverages.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2766. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, House Bill 2766 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee. The bill raises the level of an underage alcohol offense from a Class B violation, which carries a maximum fine of $360, to a minimum fine of $350 on the first conviction and a minimum fine of $1,000 for any subsequent conviction. What this bill really does is tries to level the playing field between the underage person seeking alcohol and the grocer. In my first term here, a local merchant in my area, in my district, stopped me and said, why don't you do something about the people who are trying to buy alcohol? If we accidentally sell some to them, we end up getting a substantial fine, and nothing happens to the kid that's trying to buy it. And this will level that. And you got to take into account, it's not only the Albertsons and the Kroger's and those stores, but the little neighborhoods, what I call stop-and-rob groceries, that are frequently owned by newcomers to America, and maybe their employees are people. And they're not really, it's easy to deceive them with some phony ID. And then another thing that I'd seen happen is where a kid will use ID, or at least allegedly use ID, and then when the police catch him and take him back, they'll say, oh, I didn't have any ID. They just sold it to me. What happens in a store when an employee is found guilty of selling to a minor is they'll lose their job. The store gets heavily fined. It's time to level that out. If a kid has enough money to buy beer, they got enough money to pay a $350 fine and not just put it all the onus on the store owner. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? The
carrier does.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Under this bill, would it mandate that our justice system treat, say, a 20-year-old in the Oregon National Guard back from overseas the same as a 16-year-old from Happy Valley?
Yes, it would, and the reason it would is because it treats the merchant the same. The merchant would have to pay regardless if it was a 20-year-old or if it was the kid from Happy Valley. So that's the purpose, is to deter underage people from attempting to buy liquor from establishments.
To the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Because I believe that justice is really better served when judges have discretion to look and evaluate the specific circumstances on a case-by-case basis, I will be opposing this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I voted against this bill in committee, and I'm going to vote against it on the floor, but I want to make one thing perfectly clear. This is not because I don't think that there's a problem with underage drinking. It's not because I think that people who are underage and drink should not be penalized. I do believe that. I believe it's a problem, and I do believe they need to be penalized. However, this bill makes these sentences, these fines, mandatory in each case with no discretion on the part of the judge. Judge Wyatt from Multnomah County wrote and said these fines could disproportionately impact poor youth. The court can allocate the fines as appropriate in each case, as well as ordering other sanctions that fit the circumstances, including alcohol and drug education and treatment, community service, etc. Judges are more equipped to decide how each offender should be penalized, whether that be a combination of a fine and community service. And many times these fines may be perfectly appropriate, but in some cases of a poor youth, it may be better to have more community service and a lower fine. And because this bill does not allow judges that discretion, it will be getting my no vote. And again, I just want to make perfectly clear that this is not because I don't think this is a problem. I just don't think this is the right way to address it. And as explained by Judge Wyatt, it may disproportionately impact poor youth. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I'd like to have a rule suspension so that I may read from the letter from the Harding Meyer Attorney General. Oh.
You do not need permission for that, but please go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. I thought I needed permission. Okay, I'd like to, members to the bill, I'd like to read a letter dated March 8, 2007 to the Chair McPherson and the members of the House, member of Judiciary. I want you to listen carefully when I read this bill. And I want to bring to the attention of the committee members the fact that Acting United States Surgeon General has just issued his call for action to prevent and reduce underage drinking. This is a paragraph of the Surgeon General's forward state. Alcohol is most widely used substance of abuse among American youth. Higher percentage of young people between the age of 12 and 20 use alcohol than use tobacco and illicit drugs. The physical consequence of underage alcohol use range from medical problem to death by alcohol poisoning, and alcohol plays a significant role in risky sexual behavior, physical and sexual assault, various types of injury, and suicide. Underage drinking also creates secondhand effects for others, drinkers and non-drinkers alike, including car crashes from drunk driving that put every child at risk. Underage alcohol consumption is a major social problem with enormous health and safety consequences, and will demand nation's attention and committed effort to solve. That was the quote I read. Colleagues, it's good to have educating our children, make sure they don't drink. Parents need to close attention to their children, but sometimes we cannot watch out them all the time, 24 hours. They hang out, they go out, with a false driver's license for someone else's, and they are getting a lot of alcohol. So this is a major problem. The problem is bigger than what you think, and this creates a lot of problems. Currently, when you are a store owner, the first offense, they are penalized, without exception, $350. That's the first offense. Or the 8 days suspension. And then, another thing's coming up there. I got the letter from the OLCC. Administrative penalty, which is about $3,600. So, while the store owners, by mistakenly sold to the miners, store owners penalized, there is no recourse. They have to pay that amount. And then a third time, 30-day suspension, fourth time, license is out. For the miners, when they get caught, they just got a, you know, slap on their wrist, maybe $160, and then they continue to crime, same thing. This is a major problem. Unless we do something about it, this House Bill 2766 will not solve the problem, but we are sending strong messages to the children, teenagers. If you do it, you will be penalized. Community service is a good thing, but that's not going to deter of their behavior. Money is the strong message. When you do that, you are going to get penalized at $360. And the second offense, if you do it again, you are going to get $1,000. I think that this is a good way to send our message. Protecting our children, protecting family, protecting lives of the other people, this is a good thing. This is not a panacea, but this is the strong first step. Hopefully we can resolve this one. Let's send a strong, resounding message to our teenagers. This is not the way they need to do. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
We've had a series of bills on underage drinking that have required us to consider this subject closely. This is not the last that we'll see on this floor, I think. So, you know, I've had to think about a couple of facts. One is that we have a real problem with underage drinking in this state, and it's a problem that results in ruined lives and hurt communities and, in some cases, death. And we've also had to think about what kinds of consequences are appropriate to deal with those who purchase or use alcohol illegally. Most of you know that my real job is as a teacher. I work with teenagers. And as a teacher, I'm well aware of the importance of establishing firm rules and meaningful consequences for misbehavior. But I'm also keenly aware that the majority of the time, these rigid rules and strict consequences alone do not change teenage behavior. As authorities, it's tempting to respond to worsening student behavior, and I speak as a teacher, with stricter punishments. If the problem's getting worse, we think, let's make the punishments more severe. And it's tempting to do this because that's easy and, in a sense, logical. But as any of you who have lived or taught or coached a teenager probably knows, we go down this route at our peril, and particularly when we're talking about a troubled kid who's already suffering from feelings of alienation or desperation. And so all of us know, I think, that to work, firm punishment of a teenager must be accompanied by some expression of understanding by the authority of that child's situation. So I don't have a problem with fining minors for attempting to purchase alcohol, but I do have a problem with eliminating the power of judges to express their understanding of the minor's situation with a reduced fine or a modified sentence or counseling or education. This bill, in my view, makes better politics than policy, and I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise to clarify a couple of miscommunications that have been made on the House floor today. I'll draw your attention to line 18 first. It's a mandatory minimum sentence. This bill in no way takes away existing authority from a judge today to send a child to drug and alcohol treatment and any of the other resources that are available to a judge today to help our youth understand the importance of underage drinking. I'll draw your attention to lines 22 and 23 of the bill. And 26 of the bill, all those flexibilities are still there with our judges who we honor today. But this does give one more specific consequences to youth to understand that it's wrong and there are consequences that will be paid in addition to those that a judge wants to continue to use for our youth. I urge your eye support for a good bill, not a political ploy.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm sitting here thinking of all the different bills that have passed as we looked after our teenagers in this state over my past three terms. I recall one very particular one that's really had a tremendous impact, and that had to do with teenage driving with passengers and how the teenagers had to prove their behavior was appropriate and that they were accountable and responsible. And that was a good bill. And I can't think of one we've passed that hasn't benefited these young people. I think it's so clear in this bill for a judge to rule, because it simply says an underage minor has either purchased, attempted to purchase, or acquired alcoholic liquor. I mean, from a premises that's licensed by our OLCC. I can't see how a judge's consideration could change those three points. I think this is an excellent bill. I think it's beneficial for our teenagers to be accountable and responsible. I'm glad this senator brought this.
Further discussion? Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Briefly, and I want to thank Representative Cameron for bringing up the point that I missed in my opening yard. I'm trying to reduce this a bit. In committee, when the discussion came up about discretion of judges, I made the remark that just because somebody has judge in front of their name doesn't necessarily mean they're wise. And a judge in Portland took great offense to that and jumped my daughter, who's a DA, about it. But anyway, I believe that's true. I have the utmost respect for most judges, but I know some judges I have no respect for. But the discretion of the judge too often would come by the fact that you live in the West Hills of Portland, your dad socializes with the judge, and so, gee, little Johnny, you get to go home free and don't do that again and go out and play with my son Billy and have a good time. Talk about the poor youth, disproportionate to poor youth. Let's talk about the poor merchant. Let's talk about the clerk who's got a family, who's got bills, and they're suddenly fired because somebody comes in and gets by them and they inadvertently sell that liquor to them. Colleague, this is a good bill to balance that out and to try to prevent young people. It's just one more notch to stop young people from drinking. We know that when kids start drinking at a younger age, they're much more likely to become alcoholics, and that disrupts many lives, many families. So please vote yes. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Representative Riley. Off the floor. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Representative Boquist. Off the floor. House Bill 2766, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2804, relating to Olympic Winter Games and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2804. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. At this point, I would like to defer to the one of the co-chairs of the House Workforce and Economic Development Committee, sponsor of the bill, and the good representative from the City of Gresham.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and also the thank you, the chair of the Workforce and Economic Development. Madam Speaker, I move House Bill 2404 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Lim moves that House Bill 2804 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Madam Speaker and members, I have a copy here prepared by the Oregon Legislative Fiscal Office. Fiscal analysis of this proposed legislation is about $334,100. And with this amount, and this should be referred to Ways and Means, and I agree.
Further discussion? Representative Lim, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2804 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2804 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2821, relating to combinations of vehicles.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2821. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2821, as amended, was brought forward by the Farm Bureau to increase the safety of moving implements of husbandry and to reduce wear on equipment. The amendments replaced the original bill, so in case you missed that, I wanted to bring that to your attention. Currently, a combination of three implements of husbandry or two implements pulled by a vehicle require the farm implements to be drawn on their own wheels in order not to violate transportation length limits. The Department of Transportation testified that it is arguably safer to transport an implement of husbandry on a trailer rather than being drawn on its own wheels. This bill will allow farmers to move a combination of implements from one field to another on a flatbed trailer pulled by a truck rather than running a tractor back on the road to get the implements. By doing so, safety will be enhanced by increasing the stability of the implement being drawn and will also reduce wear on farm equipment. House Bill 2821 comes to you with a unanimous recommendation from the Transportation Committee, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Beyer, do you wish to close?
No.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Representative Boquist, off the floor. Representative Berger votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2821A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2918, relating to health benefit plan coverage of pervasive developmental disorder.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2918A. Representative Greenlund.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill began as a quest for getting autism treatments covered under health insurance. And as we began hearings, one thing became very clear and uncontroversial. Very clear. And that was that we're facing in this state, in this nation, an absolute tsunami of autism. What's unclear is exactly why we're facing that, and in fact why Oregon has a higher rate of autism than other states have. And it's also not exactly it's also somewhat unclear as to what we should do to treat that problem of autism. The bill is a result of the sort of uncertainty around autism and has two parts. The first part requires insurance companies to provide any benefits they would otherwise provide to a child with developmental disability. Developmental disability is a larger class of diseases that includes in it autism spectrum disorder. And this isn't a new mandate on insurance companies. It simply requires if they cover service A, then they can't deny service A to a child simply because that child has a diagnosis of one of the developmental disabilities. And my co-carrier will discuss that in much greater detail in a moment. But the second part of the bill requires the Oregon Health Resources Commission to do a study to present us with evidence on the state of the art of behavioral and medical treatments for autism. It's a much needed study to help bring some consensus to the area. The PEB board has been very much interested in dealing with this because it's not clear to them exactly how their coverage should deal with autism. So the Office of Health Policy and Research suggests that they agree that this should be the next study by the Oregon Health Resources Commission, and therefore the bill has no fiscal for that study. They've agreed to put up their resources since there are studies required of that commission, and PEB has agreed to support that study with some of their resources because it's a very important problem facing them. This bill comes to you with the unanimous vote of the House Committee on Health Care. It makes sense as a way to begin the process for helping the state come to grips with what should be done with the treatment of autism and autism spectrum disorders. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'll yield to my co-carrier.
Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank you to the good representative, my co-carrier. I wanted to talk to you about the portion of this bill that relates to medical treatment. And I also wanted to thank the good representative from Ashland for bringing this bill and really bringing to all of us a very important issue. During the course of testimony that the committee received about this issue, it became clear that it is not just children with autism who are being denied necessary medical services because of their disability, but children across the whole spectrum of disability. It also became clear that, in fact, Senate Bill 1 did not solve this problem. That was a bill that dealt with mental illness, but it did not necessarily deal with children with disabilities. And so we heard testimony and we learned about families where they would have a health insurance plan that would cover, for example, speech therapy or physical therapy for a non-disabled child in the family, but in the same family with the same provider with the same diagnosis code would deny coverage because that other child had mental retardation or developmental disability or autism. And that, colleagues, is wrong. We should be providing physical health benefits to covered individuals, regardless of whether or not they have a disability. It is wrong to deny services to a child because they have a disability. There was some testimony in the committee that maybe this isn't really a problem. I can vouch for you and attest to you that it is indeed a problem. And I received an email from a community member who was listening to the hearing online. And she writes, I also heard testimony against the bill that indicated that Senate Bill 1 solved this problem and that items such as speech and occupational therapy are not denied on the basis of developmental disabilities. I strongly feel that you and the committee that work on this bill should follow up, as I believe this is incorrect. As I mentioned in my earlier correspondence, our insurance company is denying these services. Here is a quote from my Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield Members Handbook, which lists the following as an exclusion. Developmental disabilities, learning disabilities, autism. Developmental disabilities, learning disabilities, and autism for your insured dependent age 7 years or older. This language is identical or virtually identical to the language in the handbook from earlier years, and Blue Cross Blue Shield has told my husband that there will be no speech or occupational therapy reimbursements for services to my son after his 7th birthday. This is under the policy that went into effect on January 1st, 2007, the same date that Senate Bill 1 went into effect. This is a group policy through the Public Employees Benefit Board. Probably one of the largest group policies in the state would be my guess. Obviously, the problem has not been solved. And this was from a woman, I believe, in the Portland area. Colleagues, this bill does not seek to put a new mandate on insurance companies. It is not intended that this opens the floodgates to cover things that insurance companies aren't currently covering. As one of my colleagues in the healthcare committee said, this is not a mandate. This is about fairness. And that's what we ask for you today, is to help us pass this bill, to help families get the services that their children need to become more independent, to improve their health, and to do better in their lives with these medical services that they need, that they're supposed to be covered for, that their parents are paying premiums for. I've been speaking with the insurance industry. We'll be working closely with them on the Senate side to be sure that the language is very tight to reflect that this is for already covered services and is not opening the doors to treatments not currently covered. Colleagues, I hope that you will join me in voting yes on this bill. This will make a real difference for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Oregon families, and it will make a difference in the independence and the life outcomes of thousands of Oregon children. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I will be brief, but I do have a question for the carrier.
Which one? Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, and if it's on
he
the
does.
Second part of the bill, I'll yield to my co-carrier.
Oh, that's
I mean, the first part.
The question I have is, if we're going to put a mandate on the insurance company, is there any estimation as to what this is going to cost? How much is this going to raise the average standard insurance policy?
Yeah, it's very clear this is not a mandate on insurance companies, and they've recognized that, as did the minority members of our committee. All it requires the insurance companies is to provide services that they are already covering to the whole population. It simply does not allow them to exclude, say, speech therapy services to a child simply because that child has a developmental disability diagnosis. The insurance companies are fine with the bill as long as the language is clear that that's all it does. And we will be working with them on the Senate side to make sure the language gets exactly the way they would like it to be.
Further discussion? Did you have an additional question?
No, I just want to thank the carrier, and that clears up my question. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
And request to use a visual aid.
Representative Edwards requests unanimous consent for permission to use a visual aid. Is there objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Colleagues, I rise in support of this bill, as I've shared with you on this floor before. I am the parent of a 5-year-old son with autism, and because of that, I may need to request a potential conflict of interest as well, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker.
Yes, please state your conflict.
I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest as I'm the parent of a child with autism.
Representative Edwards declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted.
This bill, as many of you can imagine, is important to me for very personal reasons. This guy, my son Simon, has autism. It's also, though, important because Oregon has the highest rate of autism in the nation, with 1 in 98 children in this state having the condition. Lane County has the highest rate in the state of Oregon and is second only to Silicon Valley in its rates of autism. It really is ground zero for the condition. And there are at least, as I've noted before, five people on this floor right now who have family members with autism and many others who have personal friends with autism. And I know each of us has hundreds of constituents that deal with this every day. This condition, autism, manifests itself in many ways, yet our response in this state has been quite narrow. We put money into special education. And we ignore legitimate medical treatments that produce higher outcomes. We need to start taking a more holistic approach to this condition. And I suggest that this bill is a first step in getting the medical community and the education community together to deal with this epidemic. The costs of autism to society are skyrocketing special ed costs, which we all know are a huge cost driver in our education budget, much higher divorce rates among families with autism, loss in economic productivity in adulthood, and an increased reliance on social programs. The Harvard School of Public Health estimates that we will spend $3.2 million over the course of a lifetime caring for folks with autism. Now, we thought that the feds were on this issue when they passed the Combating Autism Act a couple of months back. And I'm very grateful to Senator Santorum for his leadership on the issue at the federal level. But guess what, folks? That bill that would have allocated $1 billion to the research and education efforts surrounding autism didn't get funded in anybody's budgets. So we're back to the states having to deal with this. The status quo is not acceptable. To continue to treat it solely as an education issue, ignoring legitimate medical interventions that produce higher outcomes. And I wonder why we haven't acted yet. In 1999, we had a task force that studied autism and the state of Oregon's response to the epidemic, and it really was just becoming an epidemic at that time. But of course, in subsequent sessions, as we're all aware, the state has run into a severe financial crisis, and things, you know, when we have financial problems in this state, things don't get implemented. And I would also argue that the reason we haven't acted on it is because the families dealing with autism aren't organized. They don't pay dues to an organization to show up and lobby legislators. They don't pay dues to lobbyists to come and work an issue. They rely on you and me. We're all that they have. They're too busy trying to get their kids to school, take their kids to therapy appointments, and just live in their daily lives. We are ground zero for this issue, yet we have done less than 17 other states.
Representative Riley yields.
Thank you, Representative. We are ground zero for this issue, yet we have done less than 17 other states, which actually have mandated that insurance will cover autism. And as we've explained, that this bill doesn't even do that. But 17 other states are ahead of us on this. We must act now, not only for my son Simon, but for the hundreds of constituents that each of you have that have to deal with this on a day-to-day basis. And I encourage your support for this good bill.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close?
I do wish to close, Madam Speaker. The representative from West Eugene very impressively gave a big part of the close for this bill. Those of us that have family members with kids on the autism spectrum understand how complicated this issue is. I happen to be one of those. I have a grandchild on the spectrum with Asperger's disease. And I see how that child's family life revolves around dealing with the special needs of this child. What was an epidemic in 1999 is now a tsunami about to engulf us in this disorder. The statistic that 1 in 98 kids have autism is 1 in 98 kids that have been identified with having autism. It's quite certain that number is much larger and grows grows by the year. One of the very positive things that came out of this discussion in the committee was that the director of the Department of Human Services and the director and the superintendent of education in the state have agreed to form a joint task force to update that 1999 report, because while it was valid at the time when we were beginning to worry about the disease, now that it's about to become a crisis, needs a new response. And I'm glad that the two agencies that are most responsible for dealing with this have taken up the gauntlet and are going to work on it. This bill is a first start. It will give us the information we need to deal with the process, to deal with the problem of to what extent our social and behavioral treatments effective for this disease. It'll provide some immediate relief for families with disabled children. And I urge you all to join the 9 members of the healthcare committee that voted in favor of this bill and vote yes today. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. Representative Gelster?
Yes, Madam Speaker. I forgot to declare a conflict of interest also.
Please state your conflict.
I have a child that would have access to services he does not currently have access to if this bill passes.
Representative Gelster declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Representative Boquist, off the floor. House Bill 2918A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of House bills be carried over to their proper place on Monday, May 14, 2007, third reading calendar, except House Bill 3314. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3314, related to vehicular contact with vulnerable user of public way and appropriating money.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3314A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today I ask your support of House Bill 3314, which comes to you from the Judiciary Committee. It's a bill that would protect vulnerable roadway users from careless and reckless drivers. The bill defines a vulnerable roadway user and establishes a choice for those who seriously injure or kill a vulnerable roadway user. But please let me be clear, the driver must be considered careless or reckless to be affected by this bill. There are two paths available for this offense. The first is to appear in court and pay a fine of up to $12,500 along with the suspension of a license. The second path is to enter a driver improvement program and complete 200 hours of community service. The driver improvement program would teach drivers how to safely share the road with vulnerable users, and it would be also offered by private providers with those costs covered by the careless or reckless driver. And it also requires the driver be assessed to ensure that they're physically fit to drive. I think by establishing this driver improvement program, we can proactively address the causes and better prevent future accidents. In the Judiciary Committee, we heard from a variety of families who had loved ones killed or seriously injured by careless drivers. And it's difficult for me to recreate the difficulty and pain they've experienced. It's a serious issue, and this bill, I think, is important because it holds those drivers accountable when they're careless or reckless and cause serious injury or death. It's a proactive approach that helps us get at the causes of these accidents, and I'd ask for your support. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing no one. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you very much. What happens if a skateboarder who shouldn't, in my opinion, even be on the highway itself, and he's out on a public highway, gets hit by a car under this bill?
Madam Speaker, Representative, again, the bill clearly requires careless or reckless driving to be effective. So I don't. It's difficult to assess all of the situations contained in your scenario, but I don't believe, based on your description, that that would apply in this situation.
Additional question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
If the skateboarder or this vulnerable person, a bicyclist, actually was the one that causes the accident, can they be fined or made to participate in the driver improvement program?
Madam Speaker, Representative, that's not addressed specifically in this bill. I think you raised an important point about the responsibility that everyone has in using the roads, and I hope we can work on that as well.
Additional question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
In most statutes, the definitions are covered or referenced in the bill. In this bill, careless and reckless, as it is referenced in the Motor Vehicle Code by statute, isn't referenced. So what definition of careless and reckless would be used by the court in making the determination whether that was what you actually did?
Madam Speaker, Representative, I believe I have the answer, but let me confer with counsel for just a moment. Madam Speaker, Representative, it appears, based on good advice here, that the relevant section is in 161.085, and I can read it. It says, recklessly, when used with respect to a result or to a circumstance described by a statute defining an offense, means that a person is aware of and consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance exists. The risk must be of such nature and degree that disregard thereof constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in the situation.
Additional question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you. If the bicyclist or skateboarder, whoever it might be, receives an injury or even death, and was not at the time wearing a safety helmet, which might be required and is for some,
and the actual primary cause of the injury was the fact that they were not wearing that helmet, would the person still be charged for the injury? In other words, even if they had done so in such a way that it was reckless or something, but there wouldn't have been an injury if it hadn't been for the head injury, and they're not wearing a protective device, would they still be charged? Could they still be charged?
Madam Speaker, Representative, I believe the short answer to your question is yes. But again, it would require reckless or careless driving on the part of the driver. And to address the larger theme of your question, I think we do, of course, need to be doing all we can to encourage people to wear helmets on bikes.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, during the 28 years I spent with the state police, I was a lot of time on rural roads. And it wasn't uncommon to see, now I'm talking about adults, not kids. They do things just because they're kids. We understand that. But it was nearly a daily situation on the Oregon coast where I would find adult bicycle operators in the traffic lane, partially in the traffic lane, day after day after day. And often I would stop them and ask them, what are you doing in the traffic lane? Well, I'm operating in the traffic lane because in the bike lane there's a lot more gravel and it's hard on my tires. Going home about 2 months ago over by Notai, my wife and I came around a corner and we saw the bicycle operator. He's out there several hundred feet in front of us. It was almost instantaneous. He is in the middle of my lane, not along the edge. He is in the middle. And it was so close, I don't think I missed him by more than 4 or 5 feet when I swerved into the left lane. I would have had a choice of having a head-on or running right over the top of him. Nobody else would have been there to see if I was going too fast or if I was reckless or anything else. So I think it really puts us in jeopardy. I do not recall any testimony about the number of accidents involving these defiant verbal users was brought forward. As such, I don't think we know the size of the problem. They also failed to demonstrate what percent of the accidents between vehicles and vulnerable users were caused by the vehicle or was caused by the vulnerable user. Why are we going to punish you and I as vehicle operators when we cause the accident and not the vulnerable user when he or she causes the accident? I actually tried to contact the state police for the number of citations that they had issued bicycle operators and these vulnerable people did not get a response back. City of Salem says they don't separate those out so that it can't differentiate. On page 3 of the bill, lines 37, 8, and 9, a notice to the defendant that the agreement will be considered to be violated if the court receives a notice that the defendant at any time during the agreement period committed a violation of the traffic laws of this state. So you're in the program, you're 5 or 6, 7 months into it, it takes a year, and you get stopped for headlight out, taillight out, might not have your driver's license with you. Maybe your plates were expired, you didn't know it, maybe even a day or two, and the officer's just going to stop you, let you know. You can then be in violation again of your agreement, have your agreement taken away from you, and be subjected to a $12,500 fine when you, it says that you violated, not that you were convicted of the violation. So you're guilty right from the very beginning. Excuse me for just a minute, please. If you go into the bill on, I guess it's page 4, lines 38, and you can read what it says on down there, a defendant who has fully complied. Well, in order to comply, you can't have violated the section I just read you. So you'd be doing everything right, get stopped, you haven't fully complied. Therefore, it means that you could, in fact, be in violation again and subject to those fines. The costs for the program are $237 fee for the driver program, and I can recall just recently we passed a bill out of judiciary that would give courts the discretion of lowering fees, fines on traffic violations, because we wanted to make sure that older seniors with limited income, maybe single moms who didn't have an opportunity to have a lot of income, that the court would have some discretion. So here you're putting those same people now into a program, and it would be, I think, very difficult for them to come up with the $237, but they probably have to do it or get a fine of $12,500. That fine is excessive no matter how you look at it. Also, if you enter into the program, you're really admitting guilt or responsibility, and that's going to set you up in great jeopardy in the civil case. Your attorney would probably tell you not to do it. In my opinion, this is a very one-sided bill that puts each one of you in jeopardy and does nothing to educate the vulnerable highway user of their responsibility.
Just a moment, Representative. Representative Gerard yields.
Thank you. Educate the vulnerable highway user that they also have some responsibility out there. The whole thing is put on you. This person could cause four or five accidents, never have to go through the program that you have. I really believe that this bill could have been improved, that it could be fixed. I'm hoping that they will do so in the Senate. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, very, very, very short, very quick. This bill, at least in part, is being brought forth by a constituent of mine from Weston, whose wife was killed in an accident while out in the morning riding her bicycle, and as such, I have a lot of sympathy and feeling, this particular family. Some of you will understand. perhaps the reasons for that. I'll be voting for the bill. I think there are some parts of it that I don't, that are not quite appropriate, and I do hope that the Senate will correct those. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise in support of this bill, and many of you know and have seen me go out in evening rides with some of my colleagues here. I know you won't make jokes about Lycra and spandex as you've seen us going on the roads, but colleagues, this is a very important bill. This is a very serious bill. I have unfortunately lost one of my very good friends in the past to a drunk driver, and there's nothing you can say or do, obviously, to bring back a lost life, but we can send the message that a motor vehicle is a very dangerous, can be a very dangerous tool, and we need to send the message that we have to be careful whether we're around pedestrians, bicyclists, skateboarders, and that a human life taking human life is a very serious thing. And I am not one who stands up and votes on bills to increase fines on a regular basis. So, colleagues, I take this very seriously. I hope you will, too. I think this is a very reasonable approach to make sure that we have a more careful policy in the state to protect our pedestrians and cyclists and skateboarders and make sure that we do this in a reasoned approach. So thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 3314. And the comments that were made by my friend from the South Coast don't go unheard. And I think that I'm hoping that those issues can be addressed on the Senate side, and most certainly will be gives an opportunity for the Senate to weigh in on the bill too. Gives them something to do. But I think that there are some other things that we need to be aware of. One is, as drivers, we do need to be aware of other users that are on the road. And yes, as drivers, it's our gas taxes that go to pay for the roads. But a lot of the other users are also drivers. The other thing is that there, in the past year and a half, there's been an incredible, especially in the metropolitan area, an incredible increase in the number of hit-and-run accidents. And in some cases, they're not accidents. They're crashes. They're crashes that were caused by people being careless, drivers being overly aggressive, not paying attention. In the last 2 weeks, we've had two bicyclists killed by reckless drivers. And if they could have been taught that they do need to share the road, then I think it would have been a very valuable lesson for them to maybe slow down. The other thing is that if they're, we have seen, for example, what Measure 11 has done in our violent crime. It has reduced it. This is the kind of bill that if we strengthen the crimes against people that recklessly endanger the lives of other users on the road, then I think that there is an opportunity to bring some of these rates down. This was really brought to life for me on June 18th, 2005. And that's because I had a friend that was killed by a sleepy driver. And he was killed in my district, which I don't know whether you call that a double whammy or not. There is a responsibility that vulnerable users have in terms of sharing the road. But there is also a responsibility that we as drivers have to be aware that they are there and to do everything that we can to avoid them. I think that this is a bill that can get us, so to speak, down the road in that education process and helping drivers understand. And I thank the carrier and urge an aye vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, good representative. And I know that you have duly noted that I was one of the no votes in committee. And listening to the discussion, I want you to know that I am weighing the evidence. I do have a couple of questions that, as I'm looking through the notes that I took in Judiciary Committee, and I wish that you could help me with those on the record. Number one, we had testimony from a Portland police lieutenant who supported the general concept of the bill, but he was stating that he thought perhaps the charge should be available to all road users, not just vulnerable road users, number one. And number two, he said perhaps all there should be an additional enhancement for careless driving, and that would include fines and submitting to driver improvement training. Can you comment on that as far as the focus of this bill?
Madam Speaker, Representative, I remember that testimony. I think your recollection is accurate, and the focus of this bill is on the vulnerable users. I think if there are opportunities in the future to address some of the additional challenges roadway users face, that would be open to that.
Additional question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And perhaps that issue could be addressed at this time in the Senate if they acknowledge there are some questions that are remaining out here. The second testimony that I had notes from a representative from Oregon Department of Transportation that had taken a neutral position on this bill, and they indicated, since the subsequent referral to Ways and Means had been rescinded, that there would be a training component for ODOT employees, which would be an additional approximately $60,000. So how have we made consideration for that element, the additional training for ODOT employees?
Just one moment. Let me check. Thank you for your patience, Madam Speaker, Representative. That provision, I think, was relative or aimed at a previous version of the bill. The current version before you provides that the court certifies the driver improvement program that would be provided by a private party. So the cost would not be to ODOT. The cost would be covered by the person entering that program.
Clarification, please, Madam Speaker.
Clarification.
Thank you. I do recall that the switch in the elements there, but it seems to me he was commenting about what ODOT employees would have to undergo some sort of training, not in regard to the safety improvement program, but another element. But we'll just let that rest. To the bill.
To the bill.
I find it a little bit concerning that to take and try to unpack some of the concerns about this bill, there's almost an implication that some of us don't care about his life as seriously as others. And a couple of my colleagues are very concerned to have emphasized they take life very seriously, and this issue included. But no less serious is talking about a conviction for reckless driving and who's responsible for creating an accident. And I'm not trying to lay this in any other context other than there are responsibilities that we all share, whether we're driving a vehicle or we're skateboarding or we're bicycling or whatever else. We all share responsibilities because life is precious. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Boquist.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And my apology for only giving you a 3-minute heads up on this one. What is the penalty, the existing penalty for careless and reckless driving in the state of Oregon?
My reading of the statute here is that that would be a Class B traffic violation, and that if it contributes to an accident, it's a Class A.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Follow-up question?
Additional question, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
If an individual runs down, hits a skateboarder, a farm tractor, which is in the bill, a bicyclist, or even a pedestrian on the road, and they are charged under existing law with careless and reckless driving, does this bill change that penalty in any manner?
Madam Speaker, Representative, it depends, I understand, on the level of culpability, but it would potentially give the driver the option of entering this program that would include the driver improvement program.
Thank you. Follow-up question, Madam Speaker?
Additional question, does the carrier yield? He
yes.
Does.
If the reckless driver, and I'm going along in the line of questioning here, so continuing on the same trail, if the reckless or careless driver, which we admit he was, strikes and kills a skateboarder, can he be charged under manslaughter or other laws in the state of Oregon today?
Madam Speaker, Representative, the answer is yes.
Well, final question, Madam Speaker.
Additional question, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Does this proposed law increase the penalties for careless or reckless drivers in general in the state of Oregon?
Madam Speaker, Representative, if it is reckless, the answer is no. If it's careless, the answer is yes.
Point of clarification, Madam Speaker.
Clarification?
Yes.
Could you expand on the second half of that, the expansion of reckless, please?
Sure. Madam Speaker, Representative, if it is relevant here is criminally negligent homicide. That's in 163.145, which says a person commits the crime of criminally negligent homicide when, with criminal negligence, the person causes the death of another person. So in that case, it would not expand.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the comments of my colleagues and the points that they've brought up. I think there are some valid concerns, and it's important to remember that this is the first stop for this bill. It will be going to the Senate. There are opportunities to address some of the legitimate concerns that have been raised. But I think this represents a really fundamental question. After all, these are vulnerable users. And somewhat in jest, I should probably declare a potential conflict of interest as a frequent cyclist. I've had the experience of being a responsible cyclist, following the law, following the normal and intelligent decisions on the road, and having close calls. Fortunately, I've not been hit. I've not had an injury. But it does, every time that happens, make me think of the folks who have not been so lucky as to avoid such a fate. And I'll just close by referring to a letter that's on your desk from Representative Esquivel's desk from Margaret Rawlings in Medford. She talked in our committee about the experience she had with her husband and noted that after the accident, the driver, I'm quoting from her letter, was cited for improper left turn and careless driving, was able to pay a fine and avoid any further consequences in traffic court or criminal justice system. I think everyone here does care about what happens on the road. This just calls attention to the need for a higher level of it makes it more important for folks who do injure or kill vulnerable roadway users, and I'd urge your support. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
No, I didn't hear that.
Representative Wisnant, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 3314A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's final reading of memorials and resolutions be carried over to their proper place on the Monday, May 14, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 342, related to public employee retirement. Senate Bill 347, related to test instruments and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 365, related to textbooks. Senate Bill 431, related to involuntary touring of motor vehicles. Senate Bill 587, related to small employer carriers and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 789, related to share the road registration plate. Senate Bill 1011, related to land reserves and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 1017, related to order of crimes involving animals. Senate Bill 1036, related to local government construction excise taxes.
Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 62 relating to landscaping. Senate Bill 63 relating to landscaping. Senate Bill 81 relating to criminal procedures. Senate Bill 88 relating to water well constructors. Senate Bill 95 relating to home inspectors. Senate Bill 118 relating to protection of consumers from
from unconscionably excessive prices and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 122 relating to payment instruments that create obligations. Senate Bill 182 relating to registration requirements of accounting businesses. Senate Bill 192 relating to building trades. Senate Bill 195 relating to employment that ends individuals' qualification for receipt of unemployment benefits. Senate Bill 233 relating to processing of claims by state accident insurance fund corporations for certain injuries sustained by inmates of institutions of the Department of Corrections. Senate Bill 256 relating to arbitration of motor vehicle liability disputes. Senate Bill 266 relating to Governor's Commission on the Law Enforcement Medal of Honor. Senate Bill 267 relating to operation of court as a court of records. Senate Bill 341 relating to transplants. Senate Bill 399 relating to practice of reflexology. Senate Bill 490 relating to Huntington declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 569 relating to Sturgeon. Senate Bill 687 relating to insurance coverage for transportation of human remains. Senate Bill 699 relating to parking facilities in the state capitol and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 722 relating to land use planning with Metropolitan Service District. Senate Bill 880 relating to treatment of pain. Senate Bill 892 relating to Huntington declaring an emergency.
Bills read the second time are passed to third reading, as well as the bills read the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. A third reading of Senate bills. The Chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 384 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on the Wednesday, May 16, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that Senate Bill 838 be read the third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 838 related to electricity and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 838B. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move Senate Bill 838B be re-referred to the Committee on Energy and Environment.
Representative Dingfelder moves that Senate Bill 838 be re-referred to the Committee on Energy and the Environment. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 838B needs a little more work, and we would like to bring it back to committee so we could do that and then bring an improved version back to the floor.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dingfelder, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the motion should pass will say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Senate Bill 838 is re-referred to the Committee on Energy and the Environment. The Chair requests unanimous consent that the bill remaining on today's calendar be carried over to its proper place on the Monday, May 14th calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate, orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Memorandum to the Chief Ramona Kennedy, the Chief Clerk of the House, from Jeff Merkley, Speaker of the House. Effective immediately, in accordance with ORS 172.110, I am making the following changes to the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. Appoint Representative Chuck Riley, discharge Representative Tom Butler. Further announcements, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Democrats will caucus immediately upstairs. And also, Madam Speaker, I would like to request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Krieger be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2478A. The vote will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent that Representative Krieger be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2478A. It will not affect the outcome. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, how do you vote?
Aye.
He votes aye. Further announcements? Representative Kamp.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This is for the freshman class of 05 session. We have purchased together a bouquet that is out by Representative Byerflag for Representative Sumner. If you have a chance, just keep him in your prayers. Thank you.
Further announcements? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Because of the extended Democratic caucus this afternoon, we request that committees that normally meet at 1 o'clock meet at 2, and that committees that normally meet at 3 o'clock meet at 3:30.
Announcement from the chair. The Oregon Cross Disability Coalition invites all representatives to visit the Road to Freedom event, which is being held today. The Road to Freedom is a year-long 50-state bus tour and engaging photo display that chronicles the history of the disability movement and the Americans with Disabilities Act. The event includes refreshments and speakers in Room 50 beginning at 10 a.m. and an engaging historical photo display in the Galleria from 10 to 2 p.m. Please stop by and welcome the tour visitors to the Capitol. Further announcements? Remonstrances? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Request permission to read from my visual aid.
That does not require permission, but please go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to identify for the record a little news item here. California news website outsourcing local coverage to India. The job posting was puzzling. We seek a newspaper journalist based in India to report on the city government and political scene of Pasadena, California, USA. A reporter halfway a world away covering local streetlight contracts and sewer repairs. A reporter who has never gotten closer to Pasadena than the telecast of the Rose Bowl parade. So, outsourcing first claim manufacturing jobs, then hit services such as technical support, airline reservations, and tax preparation. Now comes the next frontier, local journalism. The editor acknowledged it sounded odd, but he said it can be done from afar now that weekly Pasadena City Council meetings can be done online and watched over the Internet. And he said the idea makes business sense because of India's lower labor costs. This is going to be an ongoing problem for this country and this state. Anybody who wants to join me in working on how to protect Oregon's economy and the American economy over time, I'll be happy to see you at any point. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The representative from Albany suggested today that I need to change my attitude, and when he says that, I take it very seriously. He's a lot tougher than I am. So I've been trying to change my attitude, and I've been thinking about sort of a wish list, and I wanted to share it at this time. I wish that our speaker, sometime in this session, could remove himself from the history that he experienced last session, or I don't know how many sessions, and consider the merits of a minority report when and if it comes. I wish that the representative from West Salem could step back from her pure and well-placed loyalty to her father and look at it because of his original vision for a cleaner Oregon. I wish that the representative from District 7 could step back from his impressive career and his honorable livelihood that's not just supported his family but has made him one of the most respected members in his industry. I wish that the representative from Northeast Portland and Maywood could step back from her very impressive agenda on the Environment Committee and just for a moment realize that for all her hard work, there's something in front of her that's a win-win. But you know, that's hard to do. And I'll bet you at least one of those people wish that I could step back from my fierce loyalty to my brother and my belief in who he's representing and the integrity of the grocers. Very hard to do. So when I was thinking about what the representative from Albany told me, I thought, these things hit us right where we are. They're very personal. But maybe it's not about stepping back, but rather, Madam Speaker, maybe it's looking to what unites us, which is, in my view, a cleaner Oregon, a fair method of recycling bottles, a new chapter in meaningful stewardship of our natural resources, and taking an old and aging Oregon icon and dusting it off and making it a model and a new level of respect for this country. If we could just pause and do that, maybe it's not so much about taking a step back from what we hold very personally dear and passionate, but maybe it's about, at some point, maybe it's this bill and maybe it's another one, but maybe it's about taking a step forward toward one another and finding solutions that, in this case, take us to a better Oregon. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Buckley. 10 a.m. Monday, May 14th, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House to adjourn until 10 a.m. on Monday, May 14th.
Representative Buckley moves that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Monday, May 14th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.